What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 348. In this episode, I'll discuss an article about de-escalating anti-MRSA therapy in culture-negative nosocomial pneumonia, answer the drug information question, should low serum calcium be replaced by protocol in the ICU, and share a tip for responding to inpatient medical emergencies. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode348. The article for this episode is titled Outcomes Associated with De-escalating Anti-MRSA Therapy in Culture-Negative Nosocomial Pneumonia. The lead author is Marin Cowley, and this is currently in press with the journal Chest. Prior studies of patients with culture-positive nosocomial pneumonia have demonstrated that antibiotic de-escalation from broad-spectrum empiric antimicrobials to narrower-spectrum agents decreases broad-spectrum antibiotic use without any effect on patient outcomes. However, in patients with culture-negative nosocomial pneumonia, uncertainty exists regarding the safety of anti-MRSA agent de-escalation. The authors of this study sought to determine if anti-MRSA agent de-escalation in culture-negative nosocomial pneumonia affects 28-day and hospital mortality, ICU and hospital length of stay, treatment failure, and patient safety. The study was a single-center retrospective cohort, which included adult patients admitted over a 5-year period with nosocomial pneumonia and a negative respiratory culture. The authors defined de-escalation as anti-MRSA agent discontinuation within 4 days of initiation. The secondary outcomes included hospital mortality, hospital and ICU length of stay, treatment failure, and the occurrence of acute kidney injury. Of 279 patients included, 187 were in the de-escalation group and 92 were in the no de-escalation group. Patients who were not de-escalated received 5 more days of MRSA coverage than patients who were de-escalated. However, there was no difference in 28-day mortality. It was 28 versus 23% in the no de-escalation versus de-escalation group, but this was not statistically significant. Patients who were de-escalated had a shorter hospital stay and a shorter ICU length of stay. The incidence of acute kidney injury was significantly higher in patients who were not de-escalated, with it being 36% incidence in the de-escalation group versus 50% incidence in the no de-escalation group, probably due to excess vancomycin use in the no de-escalation group. The authors concluded, while anti-MRSA agent de-escalation and culture-negative nosocomial pneumonia did not affect 28-day mortality, it was associated with a shorter hospital stay and lower incidence of acute kidney injury. This is an important study that helps to demonstrate the safety of anti-MRSA agent de-escalation in culture-negative nosocomial pneumonia. Although mortality was unchanged, shorter length of stays and less acute kidney injury are clinically relevant outcomes. The lack of effect on mortality actually strengthens the findings in that less antibiotic use, shorter length of stay, and less acute kidney injury can be achieved all without an adverse effect on patient mortality. To qualify as de-escalation, according to study protocol, anti-MRSA therapy needed to be discontinued within 4 days. This is a realistic time frame given the length of time it takes to determine if cultures are negative and suggests the study results are applicable to everyday practice. The drug information question for this episode is, should low serum calcium be replaced by protocol in the ICU? I would consider not replacing calcium by protocol based on two articles. One article in the journal Chest concludes dramatic curtailment of ionized calcium measurement and calcium administration in several studies was not associated with worsening outcomes. The absence of high-quality data to guide practice allows for a spectrum of approaches to the measurement and treatment of ionized calcium, but these approaches should be guided by basic principles of rational clinical decision-making. Widespread protocolized measurement and administration with the simple goal of normalizing values in the name of eubaxia should be discouraged. And eubaxia is a term that the authors defined as just wanting all of the boxes checked or every lab value to look normal for no other clinical reason. And the second article that would argue against replacing calcium by protocol comes from pharmacotherapy. They conclude calcium administration correlated with adverse outcomes in critically ill patients receiving parenteral nutrition. The data suggests that administration of parenteral calcium to critically ill patients may be harmful. And you can get a link to these articles in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode348. Specific scenarios where monitoring and replacement of calcium are warranted include hypomagnesemia, massive transfusion. This is due to the citrate anticoagulants in the transfused blood, which chelate calcium, parathyroid disease, and drug effects such as from cisplatin. And my tip for responding to inpatient medical emergencies. When a patient with status epilepticus does not respond to the first treatment that can be expected to stop the seizure, they are in refractory status epilepticus. In this scenario, midazolam, propofol, pentobarbital, or ketamine are possible options to terminate the seizure. With any of these options, respiratory failure is a real possibility, and the patient will likely need to be intubated for protection of their airway. If using midazolam, I give 0.2 milligrams per kilo IV bolus, followed by an infusion of 0.1 milligrams per kilo per hour. Beware of tachyphylaxis. If using propofol, I give a 1 or 2 milligram per kilo IV bolus followed by an infusion titrated as high as necessary to stop the seizures. Beware of propofol infusion syndrome and don't use very high doses any longer than absolutely necessary. If using pentobarbital, I give 5 milligrams per kilo IV over 10 minutes followed by a milligram per kilo per hour. Beware of severe hypotension. And if using ketamine, I give a 2 or 3 milligram per kilo IV bolus followed by an infusion of at least 1 milligram per kilo per hour. And there's links to the evidence supporting these doses in the show notes as well. To learn how to manage this and other inpatient medical emergencies, read my book, A Pharmacist's Guide to Inpatient Medical Emergencies, available at clinicalpharmacybooks.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.